start off, I can, with a quick mashal I saw a number of years ago. I'd like to address a few topics also that are hopefully somewhat relevant to this current state we're in, both regarding the secular calendar up to right now, more importantly, around the Jewish calendar as far as our yeshiva experiences, as far as being the last day of Hanukkah. Some boys are on their way out the next few days. Some boys are hopefully on the way in. They haven't been as in beforehand, but hopefully this Hanukkah was a time of inspiration for them, hopefully. But I'll start with the mashal. A lot of times when a person has needs medical care, so we find ourselves calling very, very often around trying to understand what options exist for us, who's the expert in that field, and we really try to do a lot of research to figure out who we should be going to and we should be reaching out to as far as being helped. We go for second opinions, we go for third opinions, we want to know someone else who was served by this doctor in the past. We'll go online, whatever, we do everything we can to find out the right doctor for ourselves. And yet, I'm sure many of us have, certainly everyone here in this room, has certainly taken a plane. We've flown somewhere beforehand. How many of you have called in advance to find out who the pilot is? What pilot school did he go to? Is he, is this someone who can tell me, does he have good landings? Does he land well? Is he pleasant when he makes the announcements over the loudspeaker? None of us have ever asked about the pilot who's flying the plane. And yet, if you think about it for a second, certainly as far as your life goes, your life is just as in his hands, if not more, than any doctor that you visit at any point in time. So how come we don't ask about the pilot? I'm not going to tell you the answer yet to this question, at least not the answer that I heard, but I will, if I can, address a certain point, a different point. We're told in last week's Parsha, the Parsha of Miketz, there's a very, very strange discussion that takes place between Yaakov and Reuven, and then Yaakov and Yehuda. It says in Perek Mem Beis, Pasuk Lamed Zayin, just a little background of the information. As we all know, we all hopefully have known the story. If you didn't read the parsha this past week, we know the story that Yosef is missing. He's gone for what he thinks is good. Yaakov thinks he's never coming back ever again. The brothers went to get some grains from Mitzrayim. While they're there, they're accused of being spies. And while they're accused of being spies, we have a story that Yosef, who didn't know at the time was Yosef, demands from them. He demands from them to leave one of their children, back in Mitzrayim. They leave Shimon back in Mitzrayim, and everyone else goes back home to collect, to bring the grain back to the father. Eventually, when the time comes, when they bring Binyamin back, they're welcome to get more grain, etc. But until that happens, they're not letting Shimon out of jail, at least not out of Mitzrayim, at least, or so they were told. At some point in the process, Reuven turns to his father and he says to him, you know, I'll take care of Binyamin, you can rely on me. Not only that, says Reuven, but if he does not come back safe and sound, read the lush with you inside, Reuven el aviv lemor et shnei banai tamis lo avien relecha. If I don't bring him back, my two kids should die. Give him to me and I promise to return him or my two sons, their life will be over. You'd imagine that would be a statement that would carry a lot of weight with it. It's a commitment of every proportion. My children will be gone if I don't do my service to you. And yet, the response is, I'm not going to send back with you. Not only that, but says Rashi, I'll read the words because it sounds very harsh. I don't want to say the words myself. Lo kibel dvarav al Reuven. He didn't accept Reuven, so Reuven. He didn't accept Reuven's point. Amar b'chor shotehuzeh. What a foolish firstborn son I have. Hu omer la'miz banav, b'chi banav heim lo banai. He says, oh, if I don't bring them back, so my son should die. They're his children. They're not my children. They're not my sons. My grandsons, my grandchildren should die? What kind of a suggestion is that why would Yaakov ever listen to that? And therefore Yaakov completely dismisses the thought of having his two grandchildren be the response for a failed mission of Reuven. Makes a lot of sense. Until you look a little further. Perek Mem Gimel. Now times are tough. Times are tough. Says that the Ra'av got even worse. Famine. Once again, someone approaches Yaakov. This time it's not Reuven, this time it's Yehuda. Rom Yehuda el Yisrael. Perek Mem Gimel Pasuk Ches. Yisrael Aviv. Shilcha Hanar Iti V'Nakuma V'Neinecha. Send him with me. V'Nichyev L'Ramus. He'll live, we will live, we will not die. We, the family, will not die. Gam Anachnu, Gam Atah, Gam Tapenu, our family, our you, our extended family, our children. Anochi Erevenu Miyadit Hachenu. I guarantee it. I guarantee it. I'm requesting from your hand. Let me take him. And here's the clincher. Im lo hevi osive lecha. If I do not bring him back to you, v'itzakti lefanecha, v'chtati lecha kol yamim, then I will be considered a sinner to you all my days. Says Chazal, Rashi explains, not only in this world will I be a sinner to you, but in the next world. My portion of Lamhaba is gone if I don't do my job back to you. Now, think for a second. You know, your son is saying to you, if I don't do my mission, then I'm doomed forever. Not only this world, but in the next world, I am doomed forever. I give up my place in Olam Haba. You'd expect a similar response. Shote! A foolish son! You think I want you to, God forbid, take a chance and not get Olam Haba? What are you, a fool? But instead, says Yaakov, wherever they have Israel, Aviem, Imkain, if it was those that sue, then do the following thing. And he gives instruction. Take with you some things from our land and bring back some gifts and bring back the money that he gave you and more money to pay for more grain. What happened to the same caring Yaakov who loves his child so much, who would never want bad to befall him? And yet here he is agreeing with the offer to lose his son, not only in this world, which is less important, but in the next world. How could that be? So I'll tell you a possible pshat. It requires us to go back a week earlier. Parshas Vayeshev. Both Reuven and Yehuda play very serious roles in this parsha. They're basically, besides Yosef, of course, they're two of the main players. Reuven was, we're told from the beginning, he was trying his hardest to protect Yosef, perhaps. And when everyone wanted to kill him, he said, don't kill him. Why don't you, we'll throw him into a pit. And his intention all along, don't spill his blood. Send him to the boar. We'll save his life. And the poor was to protect him, to save his life. Reuven wanted to save his son, his brother Yosef. Later on, when things go bad, when it doesn't exactly work out the way he planned, so Reuven, Vayishev Reuven al bor, Reuven returns to the bor, Vinei Yosef al bor, Yosef is not there anymore. And he rents his garment, Vayikras begadav, Vayishev al achav, Vayomar, Hayel in Nineveh, Ani Nibah, what am I going to do right now? Where's the kid? He's gone. What am I going to do right now? My brother, who I'm supposed to be looking after, I'm the firstborn son. I've failed my mission, what am I going to do right now? And later on even, he doesn't accept blame, he doesn't take, quote unquote, credit for what's gone wrong, he's quick to pass the buck. In Perek Membez, when they go to Mitzrayim and they're accused of being spies, Reuven is still sticking to his party line. Before they went back to Yaakov, V'yad Reuven Otam, Reuven says to them, Halo Amarti Alechem, I told you all along, Al Techtu Bayeled, Lo Shematim, I told you don't hurt the boy. You listen to me. The Gam Damo, you need to drash. Now they're asking for his blood, for our blood. Everyone's in trouble right now. I told you beforehand, it was your fault. Why did you let this happen? And Reuven, once again, is quick to pass blame. Yehuda, on the other hand, is a very different approach he takes to life. Story goes, we know Yehuda, after he was involved in the selling of Yosef. So it says, Vayered Yehuda Meisachav, he was kind of demoted in his status among the brothers. And he goes on a trip, and he has a terrible, tragic life. Loses two sons and his wife. And he has a third son. He does not want to give the son over to Tamar because he's afraid maybe his third son will die as well, and he doesn't want it to happen, understandably. We're told that he, in a man of more weakness, but maybe back then it was one of the times, but like he himself visited a prostitute who was his own former daughter-in-law, Tamar, as we're told. And later on, they find out Tamar, and he knows her. Tamar's pregnant, and she's pregnant, but it's not with his child. It's not with his own children, I should say. His children were not the ones who impregnated Tamar, and she was obligated to marry one of them, to marry Shelah. She didn't marry him. And therefore, she's an adulteress. And he says she should be killed. She should be taken out. She should be burned. She should be killed. Tamar, in a very tsanua way, she says, listen, the truth is, the person who was involved in making me pregnant is a person who has the following signs. But Tomer, hacher na. She says to him, recognize, l'mi hachotemet v'abtilim ha-matei le'aila. Whose signet ring is this? Whose staff is this? That's the person responsible for me becoming pregnant right now. Yehuda looks at it and he sees right away, it's mine. It's mine. And he can choose to do one of two things. He can say, so what? She set me up. Her fault. She did it. I'm not going to take the fall for her. Let her burn. Or he can humiliate himself. He can embarrass himself. He can fess up. You know what? My bad. That was on me. I didn't realize I'm the person responsible for this. She was not an adulteress. She was actually trying to continue the family line she was supposed to have all along. And if you can imagine the struggle he must have gone through. And in the end, she says, Son, call me many. She's right. She's right. She's not guilty. Don't kill her. I'll take this one on my shoulders. That's my bad. Yehuda, the word hodah, he admitted, he confessed. He realized, I made a mistake. It's not her, it was me. Though he could have so easily gotten away with it, no one would have known except for him and her. That's it. And he admitted what he did. Yehuda, later on as well, if you fast forward to the end of this past week's parsha, when the push came to shove and they fingered Binyamin as the one who stole the goblet from Yosef, and they said they're going to kill him, or they're going to put him in slavery for life, whatever the punishment was going to be. So Yehuda says, Anochi Yirena, I promise to be the guarantee, I guarantee his safety. I guarantee it. And he approaches. Basically, Yosef. Yehuda leads the charge to Yosef. And he says, let me take his place. Let me feel it's my bad. We're guilty. Ashmanach, we're guilty. God has found the crime of his servants. We're guilty. We did things wrong. We'll be abadim laduni. And Yosef is back to no, just the boy, just Binyamin. The next part starts, but Yigash love Yehuda. Yehuda has this big, big discussion or monologue to Yosef, which we get to, I'm sure you'll hear this shmooze over the course of the next week from many Rebbeim. He approaches Yosef to defend. What's the difference between Yehuda and Reuven? Is Reuven pass the buck? My sons, let my sons die. It was your fault. There's always someone else to blame. But Yehuda, this is on me. I will lose my spot. I messed up. I am guilty. She is right. I am wrong. There are two choices that you have in life when you mess up. You point your finger at someone else and say, that person, it was his fault that I did this. Or you look in the mirror, and he made up. My bad. I messed up, and I'll fix it. I'll fix that for next time. We're told, and this really is a Torah Shraga, I think, method of education, is we're told that a person gets a lot more when he grows, when he's figuring out on his own, with help. But he gets it on himself. No one's boxing you in. You realize, you know what? I should be better than this. Gemar Brachos, Daf Zayin Ma'alef. Amar B'yochan Mishur B'yosi. Tova Mardus Achas B'libo Shel Adam Yosef Mikama Malkios. When a person realizes his mistake and he puts it on his own heart, He works on himself, and he's upset with himself, and he puts it on his own heart. Greater is that one event than 100 or hundreds of malchios from some external source beating you down. Bad move, shame on you, you messed up. Greater is it when it comes from you. When you realize where you should be and that you erred and you take responsibility for it. And you man up. So greater is that one single event than hundreds of times when your parents punish you, when an authority figure punishes you. It's much greater than you do on your own. Much greater. We have excuses all the time that we can make and we do make. I've heard this one before. Stop me. I mean, you don't stop me, but you've heard this before, I'm sure yourself. My madrich didn't wake me up this morning. That's why I missed Shacharis. Set your own phone alarm. We need to rely on someone else to wake you up. That's an excuse. My chavrusa took a break. He went to the bathroom, so I figured I'd just go on my phone in the base of Madrash while I was waiting for him to get back. That's, you're blaming that for why you're wasting your time right now? This is a good one. This one's a good one. I'm going to really do more, you know, when I have a family, I'll start to be more serious. I'll learn more. They'll go davening better then. I'm going to mature religiously when I have a family. When I'm ready to get married. I was like, what? What does that even mean? Oh, you're going to marry the girl. You're going to tell her, I know right now. But when we get married, I'm a new man. You know, just trust me. Trust me. You know, everything up till now was everyone else's fault, not my fault. But I'm really ready for this. I just need a partner, which I think you would be. A partner. So what do you say? Take a chance on me. Why would a girl ever marry you with that line? That's a bad pick of a line. I read this one's going also. And I get this one a lot this year particularly. Do you know where I'm coming from? Do you know where I came from before I got to yeshiva? Yeah, actually I do know where you came from before you got to yeshiva. I probably interviewed most of you before you came to yeshiva. I know what you were doing also before you came. So how long do you hang on to that line? Oh, no, it's my environment. It's my background. That's why I'm doing these things. That's why I'm slow to go to davening. That's why it's hard for me to keep a seder. That's why it's hard for me to do many things. Because you don't know where I came from. It's January 1st. It's January 1st. Where you came from, like, how long do you rely on this line? When you're 45 years old, and your boss says to you, why are you always late to work? You know what I was like in high school? I never came on time then either. Like, you gotta cut some slack, boss. Not feeling it. Not feeling it. What exactly is it, first of all? What are you not feeling? You're not feeling what? You're not feeling the learning? The davening? What happens when you get married? You know, your kid... It's 2 in the morning, your kid is 4 months old, very colicky baby, cries all the time. And it's your turn to get the baby. Your wife and you have a deal. Wakes you up and says, honey, it's your turn. Not feeling it today. Excuse me? Do you have a commitment to something else? You have a relationship with somebody else? You don't have the right to not feel it. You cannot feel it and still get up and under your breath mutter, you know, I wouldn't do this, but obscenities under your breath and say, my wife, I can't believe I'll do this, take care of the baby. But you still have to take care of it. It's your job. It's what's called being a father or being a husband. You have responsibilities. Just one more point to realize, you know, those of you who in this room, many of you I can see, and I know it's some of you actually. I don't want to look and create eye contact so that you don't think I'm talking to you, but I am talking to you. It was my father-in-law this past Shabbos tells a story. He was davening in the city, and he after that was over, he heard that the chazan make a comment of like, broke my world record today of speed. I finished like in record time. My father-in-law is a very pious Jew, and he went to the person after davening. He says to him, are you bragging that you finished extra quick your davening? He's like, I'm not accusing you of having not said every word or having not had a good kavanah, but are you taking pride in the fact that you finish quicker than anyone else ever has in this minyan? He goes, the guy says back to him, oh, it's not me, it was everyone else in the minyan was pushing me to go faster. My father says to him, when you're the chazan, you're the pilot, it's on you, that's your call to make. There's no one pushing you. And when the person left, a psychiatrist came over to my father and said, I want you to know, most of my patients, they suffer from the same disease. They blame somebody else for when they make a mistake. They suffer from the same exact ailment. They err, and they point a finger at somebody else. Reuven, in the parsha, we find Yosef didn't rely, Yaakov didn't rely on Reuven, because Reuven was saying, you know, if I don't make it, take my sons. Your fault. I told you. You know what Yehuda's like? I guarantee it. It's my life on the line. Yaakov didn't want you to lose Olam Haba. But you can trust in a person who says, this one's on me. This is my bad. I'm responsible to take care of business right now. The greatest thing we suffer from in truth is that we don't understand just what we can be. We're pitching about take responsibility, man up, rise to the occasion. So for what, you might wonder? Rise to what occasion? What am I rising to? What am I going to become in the end from rising? Where am I rising? To be like less of an Am Haaretz? To be able to read an extra Rashi? Like, what am I rising to? In this couple of weeks parsha, I'm not going to beat this one with the dead horse, because it's going to be coming up all the time. This parsha, all the Rebbeim are going to talk about the same topic. I'm going to pick one shot to share with you. In a very, very troubling but completely inspiring passage that we have. And while we're doing this, you can close your eyes and picture the following scene. You're about to meet a person who ruined your life. Ruined it. And you're in a position of power. You can do anything that you want to them. You can scream, you can beat, you can kill, you can enslave for life. What would you do? Like, so many options. You can do any torture, anything that you want. And Yosef is in this exact predicament. He's got 11 of his brothers that are sitting there, like, shaking. Because the world power has just accused him of being spies, has planted evidence on them. And whatever he says is going to go. And to make matters more significant, whatever he does in the end, Chazal say, was so powerful, so awe-inspiring and heart-wrenching, this becomes the source for the day of judgment that we will face one day. The Lashon Chazal is, Oylanam Yom Hadin, Oylanam Yom HaTochacha, woe is to us in a day of judgment. Woe is to us in the day of our rebuke. What Yosef did to his brothers, and they couldn't respond. What are we going to do when we go to Shalat 120 years? What do Yosef do? I'll read to you the line that he said to them. He couldn't take it. He couldn't take Yehuda's comments. He couldn't take the conflict between his brothers. V'yom Yosef el achiv. Ani Yosef ha'od avichai. Okay, game's up. I'm Yosef. Is dad still living? And the brothers were like, they were taken. They were shocked. They couldn't answer. Chazal say, the same way that they can't answer Yosef, we won't be able to answer to God one day when we go to Shemayim. What exactly was the rebuke? So I'm going to say one of the less popular pshatim, because I don't want to take anyone else's fire they're going to give in their own shmuzes. The Shem Yishmuel has the pshat. Sakachav Rebbe, he says the following tremendous chiddush. Sometimes in life, you make a decision, and you think it makes sense and it's right. And then some point in time, it dawns on you, you made a bad call. You were off in your judgment. And everything you've done from that point forward was a mistake. You realize that yourself. You put two and two together, you solve the problem, and you realize, here is where I am right now, and I really should have been somewhere completely differently. Woe is to me. I put in my heart the realization of what error I made, what mistake I made, and you can't even respond. To understand what you could have been, what you should have been, and where you ended up, the difference, the gap is so large, you can't function, you can't respond, you're in so much pain. I'll just give you two quick sports muscles where you see this happen, and then one muscle, if not through sports, where you see the opposite took place. There's a very, very non-famous person, a college basketball player, who was one of the best players in that year's draft. His name was Hideki Smith. He played for Arizona State. You can look that up later online. And when he was a senior in college, there was a rumor that went out that he was involved in point shaving. What point shaving is, those of you don't know, unfortunately you probably do know, is when you have a bet on a game, there's a spread, you don't ever plan on losing, but you also will help the other team cover that spread. Or you should say, your team will not cover its spread. It'll win, but not by 7 points, only by 5 points. And they can bet against you, and the other team will win for betting against you. And he was accused of being involved in point shaving. Never confirmed. Supposed to be a lottery pick in the draft. And back in the day, they'd have something different. Now, back then, they used to have cameras in the person's home with all of his family members. They're having all their favorite foods, and they're waiting. And each room has their own little camera. They're waiting for the name to be called. Then you see everyone celebrate and jump in the air and hug each other, and they were drafted by whatever team it might be. And he was among those great prospects that had cameras in his room. All his family was together. Supposed to be one of the top 10 picks in the draft. Top 10 picks go by. No one picked him. 15 picks. 20 picks. No one touched him. First round is over. He doesn't get a call. So the room is starting to kind of like empty out. And as the draft finishes, that his name was never called, it dawned on him that for $20,000 he immediately got onto taking, he lost millions upon millions of dollars in contracts and endorsements. All for what? For $20,000 of point shaving. Which later on he confessed in a very big Sports Illustrated article of what he did when he was in college. Sitting in a room by yourself with all of your deli sandwiches half eaten, and the cameraman putting his camera away, and you're looking around, and you have no job. The amount of oylam yom adin, the amount of realization of what you just did, how so not worth it it was. You don't need anyone to tell you about it. Yosef said, I'm Yosef. That's all they had to hear. They started to review the last 22 years of their life, watching their father day in, day out suffer. That they threw away, literally, a tzaddik. That's all they had to hear, and they start to flash back in their life, what have I done? You don't need greater mussar than that. You go to Shemayim one day, you're going to see a picture of what you were supposed to be and what you became in the end. What are you going to say? You're going to deny God that that's not what you were? No, I was a defective human being. No, God, you got it wrong. I can't wake up for many in the morning. You know that. You wired me. No, that's not how he wired you, God says back to you. You blamed me for giving you life, and now as if you can't function? Well, what happens when you stay up until 3 in the morning, 4 in the morning, watching movies, television shows? It's true, you're a regular human being. You're not a superhero. That's true. I wired you like a regular human being, but you chose to live your life that way. I'm a big Georgetown Hoya basketball fan. At least I was back in the day. And there was I remember watching this. I don't watch the game, but I watched this highlight multiple times since then. And you've all seen it yourself. If you ever watched one of those clips of the tournament at the end, they have all these little clips of the famous plays that happened in NCAA tournament history. There's a clip of Freddie Brown, who was the point guard for the Georgetown Hoyas, playing against North Carolina Tar Heels, Michael Jordan's famous shot. Right after he had that shot, there was still time on the clock. Freddie Brown, the point guard for the Hoyas, dribbled the ball up, and he turns to pass it right to James Worthy, who plays for the wrong team, the other team, the Carolina Tar Heels. And that was it. That was the play. Now, you'd imagine John Thompson, who is a 6'7", large man of color. That's not racist. That's not racist. I mean, racist. I'm just describing what it looks like. And you know, you'd think he would grab the guy, pick him up off the ground, give him a one-over. The scene that you ever watch, you'll see it. It's the most moving scene as a Hoyer fan, especially. He always draped a towel over his shoulder. That's what he used to do when he would prowl the sidelines. He went up to Freddie Brown and he like embraced him. And Freddie Brown is crying right into the towel, right in the shoulder. You don't have to tell him, Freddie, you know, that's the wrong guy to pass to. We've worked on this. We're this color. You're that color. It's not required. Because when you realize what you've just done, no one has to share it with you. It's over. As an aside, Freddie Brown, about 15 years later, was the girls' junior varsity basketball coach for the Berman Hebrew Academy. That's how far he fell from his days. Girls' junior varsity assistant coach! You don't have to tell him you made a mistake. You realize that on your own at that point in time. Like, that's something you go to sleep with every night. You know that you made a mistake in that. There's one story, though, that happened at a much happier ending. And I'll just use that as a quick detour the last part of the schmooze and a real kick to the next few months we have ahead of us. My boys and I, we used to, when they would live at home, they left me since then, but they used to live at home with me. And we used to read a book every night together before we went to bed. We read little stories. We read the story of our Pesach Kronos stories, the Magid stories, the beautiful series of stuff. And we had a great, great story, many great stories, but one of them that really stuck with me that I speak about every so often. It was a boy named Bensi. Bensi was a very popular kid who learned in Gateshead Yeshiva. And whenever they have people leave the yeshiva, like they've been there 2-3 years, they would have like a goodbye party for them, and there would be a speaker. And Bensi was almost always called upon to speak because he was so funny and so witty, and he had just a great mastery of the language, and they always wanted to speak for everyone else. And then there came time, he was leaving the yeshiva. He was there for 4 years, 5 years. He was a tremendously successful bachur in the yeshiva. Before he left, they had a big party, and they said to Bensi, "Why don't you speak for yourself? Speak about yourself." So he's like, happy to. But they were shocked, because it wasn't a joke that he said. He didn't say any jokes. He gave an inspiring speech by telling a single story. He got up there, like I am right now, in front of the entire crowd. He said to them the following. He said, "I want you to understand just how special of a shiva that we have." And everyone's like, nodding their head, like, "Yeah, we know. Next, what's the next line?" He said, "No, you don't know. You don't know. None of you know." So I'm not talking about his wisdom in Torah knowledge. I'm not talking about that at all. That is for sure unparalleled. We know that already. He's written Svarim. He's a genius. Kol kavod. I'm talking about his character, his sterling character and midos. Because if it wasn't for him, I would never be here right now 3 or 4 years after I started. And I want to tell you a story that even he doesn't know yet. He said, "My second day in yeshiva, I was being harassed by many of you in this room. I was a new guy. I came later on, and you're bothering me. You're teasing me. You're poking me, and I had no choice but to run away from all of you. And I locked myself in the Otis Svarim, in the library of the yeshiva. Closed the door, locked from inside. You know, put in my head. Oh, finally, some freedom, some peace of mind." Banging on the door, let me in. "Not letting you in, chaps," Bensi would say to them. "I know what you're trying to do, I'm not letting you in. I need time away from you, you're killing me here." Okay. A lull, quiet, about 2 minutes later, knock on the door. "Who is it?" says Bensi. "It's Rosh Shiva." He says, "Come on, chaps. I'm not falling for that. Rosh Shiva line, yeah, I'm going to fall for that. Open the door, you can start poking me again. I'm not open the door for you." Quiet. 30 seconds later. "Who is it?" "It's Rosh Hashiva. Can I go inside, please, and get it safer in my library?" Wow. Bensi's like, "What am I going to do? I just locked the Rosh Hashiva out of his own library. My second day of yeshiva, I'm going to pack my bags, go home, and find someone else to learn." And he opens the door to the library. The Rosh Hashiva is standing like this, eyes closed. He won't look. And he scooted around the yeshiva. She went to the library, took whatever Svarim he needed to, and never to that day, until just now, did he know it was Bensi. Bensi said, "Do you know what a yeshiva we have? If it wasn't for him, what would I have been in the end? Where would I have ended up?" It's a person who realized everything that I've done up till now is because something happened that I can point at and say, "That's what happened, and that mamash saved my life. That saved who I am today." What can we be? What's awaiting us? And with this last point, the Gemara in the Devarim brings down that Pei Aleph, Amud Aleph. Describes, trying to figure out, we're trying to rack our brain, what in the world did we do to lose Eretz Yisrael, to lose the base of Mitzvah? What did we do? What was our crime that we committed? And the Gemara says a very unusual line. Amr of Yehuda, Amr Rav, she'en mevarchin b'Torah tchila. We did not make birchas at Torah when we learned Torah. That was the crime that we committed to cause us to be expelled from our country and to have our temple destroyed. Which means we learned Torah. We just didn't make a bracha on it. What does that mean? That's worthy of a punishment of exile and destruction like we had? the riff, not the riff that we know from the back of our Gemara riff, but the riff that's found in the Ein Yaakov that Agaditza. He points out that the reason why is the first bracha we make before we learn Torah, the bracha we make when we read from the Torah, is Asher Bachar Banu. We're chosen. We didn't make that bracha. We didn't feel chosen. We felt like we were Nebuchs. We had to be Jewish. We had to keep the laws. We didn't want to. We wouldn't say the words Asher Bachar Banu because we didn't feel important. We wished we hadn't been. I was talking to someone beforehand about the fact that we put a curfew last night in Yeshiva. They were pointing out to me, like, I don't understand. It's my custom. My custom is to go out at night on New Year's and frolic. My custom. I responded back to them, your custom is to put tefillin on every morning. That's your custom. Your custom is to keep kosher. Your custom is to learn Torah. That's your custom. You might have, for some reason, frolicked. It's not your custom. That's what a foolish person might be doing sometimes when he gets distracted of who he really is. When he forgets Asher Bachar Banu, he forgets that he was chosen as a Jew. You are a prince in the world, you're a prince. And you forget that you're a prince sometimes and you make mistakes. That's not called customary. That's called a lapse of thought. Every December 31st at nighttime. It's a lapse. It's a mistake. The second shot, which is something that unfortunately in this room we feel similarly, is that we didn't make a bracha before we learned Torah. It says the Alishur of Volbi, we didn't feel Torah was bracha worthy. A delicious meal. I'll make a bracha on that. I'm so excited to eat. Torah? I'll take it or leave it. It doesn't really matter so much to me. It's not bracha worthy. Kadosh Baruch Hu gave you the greatest gift in the world. He gave you a gift where he says to you, I want you to have a piece of me, and since you're finite, I'm infinite, it's really hard to do so. So I'm going to give you a gem, a treasure that is close to me, and it's all about me. Take it. Take it. Engage in time studying with me. Learn about me. Understand me as best as you can. Just engage in it. Spend time. And we feel not bracha worthy. I'd rather have a piece of cake. I'll even make a bracha on that. I'd rather go out. I'd rather sit in my room and watch the dumbest television show. I'd even make a bracha if there was one on that. But Torah? Not feeling it. Just to end off, I was driving on a Tirusha Lion this past week, and I was behind a bus. It had a huge cigarette ad on it. And in one corner it says on it, alive with pleasure, in quotes. Then the back right, on the bottom right, it had a big box that said, warning, this will cause death. Alive with pleasure. But warning that if you have that pleasure, you're probably going to die earlier than you should. Now, you'd think people would not smoke. It's a little bit of a turnoff at that point in time. And yet, look around the world. We do it. We smoke. We get pleasure. While being told this will kill you. It's okay. We in Yeshiva also give warnings. We give warnings. We give restrictions. We have expectations. But ours is very different. We want one thing from you. To have the most pleasure. That's all we want. You get to have the most pleasure in the world. That's all we want from you. Every rule that you have, every restriction that you have, every demand we make of you is just so you have the most pleasurable life possible. I don't know if this is the real words of the song, but there's a Maccabees version of a song that they changed the words around for. It's a beautiful, it's called Good Life, is that what it's called? Yeah. A Good Life. So it says in the very the end of the song, which I wrote down here so I can quote it to you. Living in the moment lasts for a moment. That's it. You want to live in the moment so you get out of it a moment. And then it's over. And two things might happen afterwards. Either go back to nothing or you go back to regret. That is not pleasure. That's not happiness. That's running around trying to not get caught, trying to just please yourself. It's so irresponsible. It's so immature. And then you point a finger at someone else. No, it was their fault because I grew up that way. The Badrich didn't wake me up. It's my custom. You know what real life is? You know what real life? I'm being quoted here, so I'm going to say something that I will stand behind when people hear it afterwards. People say often, real life. I got to get back to real life. Where are you going next? College. Well, college is real life? Really? You sit in a campus, just in your own world, tests, take your tests, go out, see people, you go parties. That's real life. It's not real life. Oh, marriage, a job, a career. A job is real life. Really? Job is real life? I go, and I work hard, and I make money, and then I switch to another job, make more money, then I retire. So now you're not living anymore because you must have left your job. So now you have no life left because you just retired. A job is life? A job is not life. What's life? Life is just that moment. That's all life is. Whatever you're up to in your life, that moment is your real life right now. That's it. Nothing else is life. What happens in a week from now is not life yet. That didn't happen yet. You're only what you are this exact same. I don't mean living for the moment. I don't mean that. I mean living in a moment. This is only thing right now. This is your life. If you're here right now, this is your current life. This room right now is your current life. When you go out on the basketball court, if you result and make the championship game, that is your current life. Just that game is your life right now. How you act on the courts. How you talk to the ref. That's your current life. That's it. Just that's your life right now. When you get a phone call, when they give the revivalist later, that is your current life. Just that moment is your life. It's what are you running from to? Where are you going? Whatever you're in right now, this is your life. This is all that your life is right now. You want to have all the plans in the future you want, go to the best colleges, the best job. What if you don't get a job after you go to the best colleges? Or you get fired or your company closes down. So now what? Your life is ruined. It's not ruined. It's a different challenge you have right now. You have in front of you every moment of your life a separate challenge. Just that moment, it's a challenge. It's very easy. That second is your life. If you make the right call, then you get the most pleasure out of the world. You make an error, you make a mistake, then what's your life? It's a terrible, terrible choice you just made. The reason why the pilot, you don't ask about the pilot, but you ask about the doctor. Who's my doctor? It's because the day you go to a doctor and he makes a mistake on you, God forbid, you don't survive. He goes home that night to his wife and his kids. He has dinner like he always does. And he feels bad. He gets over it. It's a job, it's to get over it. But the pilot goes down with you. The pilot goes down when you go down. You trust him because you know that he looks in the mirror and wants himself to live. So you trust the pilot. It's not because he has better credentials, because you understand that if something happens to you, it happens to him also. We're about to right now, we're over a certain hump in the year. I don't mean the secular calendar. Post-Hanukkah. There's an opportunity we have right now for a stretch of time. And we've done a tremendous amount the last few weeks. We've learned 4,000 dafim over the course of 9 days. Many of you have accomplished and tried at least to accomplish 30 hours of learning over break. We're about to get to a stretch of time. It's all about not bursts, but consistency. Stop blaming someone else when you make a mistake. You err, look in the mirror, man up. Encourage each other. Create an environment that will inspire each other. Understand that where are you running to next? What are you looking at next? What's awaiting behind the corner? Who cares? Right now you're here. Why miss here? Because look at what may be later on. There's no rush to go anywhere except for the moment you're in right now. Maximize the moment. You're the base medicine. Your life right now is these next 30 seconds trying to decipher a Rashi. That's your life right now. And when your phone buzzes, that's not your life. That's a fantasy. That's not part of you right now. Your job is to dismiss that. Western culture right now is not your life. A television show, even the football playoffs around the corner is not your life. It's grown men who never met you, could care less about you at all, playing a game which I like also. But do not compromise your growth because of that. Right now you're here. It's a shame. You should humiliate you here. You should understand what here actually means. And you should merit to really live in the moment. Have a great rest of Hanukkah.